Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Today we are sharing more mommy stories. We have close to a regular week, though, today, too, because we're going to have Burton on Thursday and Robert on Friday. And we're going to welcome back attorney Kevin Anderson on Wednesday. But in the meantime, a friend of mine that I've known for, goodness gracious, most of my professional life, and we used to work together in Tampa, Florida, at one of the television stations. And she's a professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern in Illinois. She is going to join us today to share some of her mommy stories. And like most mommies, she is busy, but she's going to be off and on with us today. So want to talk with her, share her story. Her name is Dr. Ava Thompson-Greenwell. But if you have mommy stories that you would like to share, please don't hesitate to join us. The number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. But before we get to that, well, we're going to take her as soon as she's able to come on because she's going to be off and on with us today. But before, while we're waiting, so there's been this ongoing story recently, and it's not just recently. Apparently, some of this has happened since the beginning of the year with regards to baby formula, right? So, and I've even noticed it when I'm doing, you guys have heard me mention Shopkicks and stuff like that. So when I'm doing my Shopkicks, for example, one of the baby formulas was one of the ones you can scan, you can get points and stuff like that, or you can purchase and get points, obviously, at this age. And I have no kids or grandkids. I'm not purchasing baby formula. But it is quite noticeable if you are in that area of the store that there's a shortage of baby formula. And the thing that came, there are so many things that came up this weekend about it. One of the things is you have three companies that shows that control approximately 80% of the market when it comes to baby formula. So when one of those companies has an issue and has to take baby formula off the shelf, then it really causes a problem. Not only that, you know, a lot of these formulas have to be approved by the FDA. And one of the things that came out in a report this weekend, my husband and I were watching on TV, they were mentioning that there's a certain part of the regulatory area of the FDA that only has for the whole country, 9 people dealing with these issues. So my husband and I got into a conversation. Now, like I said, don't have kids, but we have, you know, we have families, we have friends, we have, you know, all kinds of loved ones that, you know, when these things kind of come up, we talk about it, we're concerned about it, we want what's best for everybody. So the first question is, why do they only have 9 people? You know, they've got... They spend all this money on all of this other stuff. Why in a nation of 50 states of, you know, the numbers that we have and, you know, why are there only 9 people? And then, you know, because they talked about also some whistleblowing that had occurred. And, you know, that can, that takes, you know, that's a whole nother step in terms of not just the regular regulation of formulas and other food and drug products, but then you have to deal with when there's specific cases where people have been trying to circumvent the law. Okay, you got to deal with that as well. So that was one of the things that, you know, we were watching and we got into a discussion about. And then we continued our discussion because things that we talked about is, you know, there was a time when, number one, you didn't have formula per se, you know, and yes, we're going way back there. But there was a time when people had to get creative and feed children, if they weren't feeding them breast milk, they actually had to feed them, you know, food that was, you know, I guess as processed as you could do under the circumstances, or you had cow's milk or goat's milk or whatever, you know, that was available. We still ended up being a strong country, in spite of the adversity that we had. So one of the things we may need to look at is, you know, looking at just more natural ways to feed our children that, you know, may make them healthier. Because one of the things that they're concerned about is with this lack of formula that's available, that people who are having a hard time affording formula in the first place, they are cutting the dosage of the formula. They're watering it down. And they're saying that that can not only lead to significant health problems with the baby, that can even be fatal. Okay. And then you get into a whole different range of issues. So if the person who's cutting the formula because they're trying to afford more formula ends up harming that child, then is that person negligent? Is that person, you know, subject to some sort of criminal prosecution? And, you know, unfortunately, when it comes to determining who's guilty of a crime and who's not, there are disparities. There are, you know, the numbers are skewed. I would hate to see that happen. So I encourage comments, questions, all of that. The number is 516-387-1944. Because one of the like I said, we did end up getting into a discussion with it as we were watching and after we were watching this particular news program. We do kind of look at some of the news programs on Sunday mornings. And after church, during breakfast, whatever, after breakfast. One of the things we got to talking about is, well, what about the women who are able to and can breastfeed? Well, we got into the discussion of if you're a working mom, the time and ability to pump breast milk, to have it available for the child, you know, what kind of conditions are there in the workplace that allow this? Is it a tolerant workplace that understands, hey, you know, sometimes I might have to bring my child to work. You know, sometimes I may have to take some time and go aside and pump this milk and have it in a cooler or something available. You know, now, moms out there, like I said, I am not a mom, so correct me in the areas where I am wrong. I appreciate it because everybody needs to know and we all need to share this information. So we, like I said, we got into a whole bunch of discussions. And so I want to encourage, it is an election year. I want to encourage everyone, whether you have a child or not, to think about what the extenuating circumstances are and start corresponding with your legislators in terms of, one, what can we do to make the environment a better working environment for our moms? Do our moms really have enough time off to bond with their children and dads? But we're in May. We're still on Mother's Day. I'm still doing that. Do we have enough time to bond with our children as moms? Do moms have enough time? Second, do you allow for children in the workplace? Maybe it's just for extenuating circumstances, or maybe you actually provide a daycare. What accommodations are you making, for that? I'd like to see also maybe some programs that do some sort of company matches for moms, expected moms. If you put in a dollar, they put in 50 cents even or something. But something that helps to build funds to be able to afford, all of this extra stuff that comes along with getting the child, I would say, off the ground, so to speak, in the early years of the child, all of those diapers, all of the formula, all of the doctor's appointments and stuff like that. They were talking, I heard one lady talk about, was it 4 cans of formula that ended up being $250. Now, I'm not sure what the price of formula is supposed to be, but to me, 4 cans of baby formula seems like for $250, that just seems like an exorbitant amount of money. And yes, we're experiencing inflation all over the place, but this is something that I think really needs to be looked into. I think also we need to look at, is there a monopoly in the baby industry, because it is an industry now. Do we have companies that are pushing, other smaller businesses out of the market, businesses that some of them that may have gotten into the industry because those larger companies weren't providing the type of nutrients, the type of food, the type of supplies that they felt that they needed. And you all heard Candace Thomas last Monday, she's our hair care hotline expert. She's with Be Lavish Salons in South Downtown Orlando. She's also a nurse now. You heard her talking about things that she was doing to prepare for her upcoming baby. And things that she was looking at in terms of hair care, in terms of food, all of that. So, these are not necessarily isolated incidents. This is something that we need to get our Congress, our House and Senate representatives on board with in terms of investigating first. Is this industry being properly regulated? Two, is there a monopoly? Three, can we look at reliable and healthy alternatives, more natural alternatives that may sufficiently provide nutrition for our babies? Can we stop ruling some of that stuff out? I did want to bring that to everyone's attention. So if you have a question, a comment, a concern, something that I've missed, I would greatly appreciate it, because I just found the whole thing quite disturbing. And especially, like I said, the more my husband and I talked about it and looked at all of the possible ways that this whole thing could go sideways, I just really wanted to get that out there, and I wanted to ask you all to please follow up. You have a family member, a friend that's expecting, or that they've gone through a hard time with the pregnancy, with what goes on after the pregnancy. I've had family members that have had, and friends that have had to be on bed rest, or like I think Candace mentioned about developing diabetes, blood pressure, there's blood pressure spikes, all kinds of stuff that happens, so these are just very crucial and formative years, formative period of time And I really want us to realize that this isn't something that you just say, well, that's her problem, because it's not just her problem. It's everybody's problem. It's our problem. We all got to pitch in. Like I say, even if it's just writing a letter or making a phone call, that's not asking a whole lot, you know. But you know, and go and look, because, you know, this is a positive thing that you can do with the internet. Go and look up the track record of your government official to see, you know, how they have stood on certain ones of these issues, and if they are really attentive to what it takes to, you know, make a family whole. You know, so that's what I'm asking you to do. The number, if you have questions, comments, 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Our hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we want to welcome Dr. Ava Thompson-Greenwell back to the show. Hi there, Ava. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Gretchen?
I'm doing quite well, quite well. Always great to hear your voice. It's been a while. But thank you for joining us and sharing your mommy stories. So, and you definitely can give us some advice on juggling, because you have,
yeah, I'm doing that today.
Yes, you are doing that today with, you know, all your children and all of the career moves you've made since we've known each other. So talk a little bit about your family.
So, as you know, I have, my husband and I have three adult children, and the oldest just turned 29. We have a 27-year-old, and we also have a 23-year-old. And so they're all 20-somethings, which is a really interesting place to be. I think as a parent, you know, some of the hardest things, and particularly as a mom, some of the hardest things when they're little is really just the exhaustion that you feel of, you know, washing clothes, getting them ready, getting them dressed, getting yourself dressed. And so, you know, it's really physical. But I think as they grow older, you're really vying for their minds, you know, really trying to understand what their thinking is about certain things. And also going through periods where, you know, as teenagers, you almost don't recognize them anymore. You know, you say, no, that's not my child. And I think that part, these transitions that you experience as a parent, as a mom, are things that we don't always expect. I mean, we always hear people talk about, oh, those teen years, they're so difficult. And I think, yes, that can be true. But I also think that in today's world, our children's mental health is so, so important. You know, during the pandemic, we were hearing about young people in particular experiencing all kinds of, you know, traumatic situations, being at home. And it's just, I think the world that they live in is not the same world that I grew up in. I mean, you know, we're talking on a Monday, and we know over the weekend the tragedy that happened in Buffalo, New York. You know, so if you're a parent, how do you explain that, you know, to your child when those kinds of things occur? So I think that, again, that vying for that mind and hoping and praying that their mental health can remain stable, not just when they're teenagers or children, but also even as adults. So I think you never stop being a parent or mom, even once they are in their 20s.
I can't believe you're talking about them being in their 20s, because, and the reason I say that is because you had a situation that is still kind of weighing on my mind with one of your sons, because it kind of is one of those situations where a lot of our young black men You know, we have to kind of pay extra attention to, you know, what's going on with them. So you can get into as few or as many details as you want, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, yes. And so when my son, this was in 2012, my son was, he was about to turn 14 in October, and in August of 2012, he was riding his bike home from a friend's house. And as he was riding his bike home, he was being trailed by the police here in Evanston. And when he got to our house, I happened to be in the backyard. He had pulled his bike up to the driveway. I happened to be in the backyard that day, and I heard a commotion going on, and I opened up the gate, and I saw these two white police officers handcuffing my brown-skinned son. And I asked, I said, "What's going on here? What are you doing?" And so they say, you know, there's been a burglary in the area. Your son fits the description. And so having been a reporter, you know, I know how these things can go south quickly. And I asked, well, what's the description? And they said, black male wearing cargo shorts. Well, could be a lot of people in that particular, in our particular area and that particular day. And so, you know, here I am as a mom trying to hold on to my son's arm and just making sure that he's going to be all right. By this time, I think there are five police cars that have, you know, converged onto our home. You know, just praying that, okay, I don't want this to be a situation that ends up in the papers or on the news because I've seen it happen this way before. So they actually bring this woman over to do what they call a show up. And so when she says, oh, no, he's not the one, then they release him. But the fact of the matter is, to have your 13-year-old child handcuffed in front of his own home just for riding his bike is a very traumatic situation. And I think to this day, it's still very traumatic for our son because, you know, every time you turn around, right, there's a story about black men being killed, black people being killed. And so that's the part that I think is so different, I think, for our children, young adults today, that it wasn't in your face the way it is now. You know, I grew up in Chicago, and obviously, you know, there were stories about bad things that happened, but not the way it seems like they are. And again, these things were happening all along, right? But they weren't in your face in terms of social media the way they are today. And so that incident, you know, was just one incident of many that, you know, my son in that particular case was directly involved in. But there have been other incidents, so every time he sees something like this happen, I'm sure it must be triggering for him. So it's hard to move on, I think, from those kinds of things. I think when we see what happened in Buffalo this weekend, you know, you have to be heartless not to just feel for the people who were, just for the people of Buffalo, you know, whether they had somebody at the store or not. You have to feel for the people. But more importantly, you know, I think I feel as though things are not getting better. And that's what you hope for your children, right, is that things will get better in the future. And I'm not so sure. I'm not feeling that way. And that's the part that's really very heartbreaking, I think, as a mom, is that you want your children to be successful. You want them to be mentally healthy, physically healthy. You want them to be just whole as individuals. And I think what's troubling is that the world just seems like it's such an evil place sometimes. And that's it's really saddening.
It is. It is very sad. So I know this is like, you know, we don't want to necessarily talk about all of the negatives, but because you are a person that has gone through this and I know you, I want to kind of ask a couple more questions about, did you have to go through counseling in terms of him going through counseling, as the family going through counseling? Did you all have to do any of that?
So we did do that for our son right away because we knew that, you know, there could be some, you know, repercussions as it relates to that. And he it actually continues, you know, to go through some counseling periodically, just depending on, you know, what's going on in his life. We as a family, though, my husband and I did not go through counseling specifically for that, but we probably should have, to be honest with you, because I think that, you know, it's a situation where you try to repress it, right? You don't want to think about it. You know, every time I see a police car, right, one of the first things I do is I check and see. In fact, this just happened to me over the weekend. A police car had pulled over somebody. The first thing I do is look and see, is this a black male? And if it is a black male, I usually try to slow up a little bit, just so I can sort of see what's going on. Not that I'm necessarily going to get out, because I don't want to necessarily be a part of the situation, but if there's something that I can do that's going to be helpful, whether it's, you know, from a distance, maybe recording something, or at least being an eyewitness to something, then I want to do that, you know. So, again, the counseling piece I think is very important. We've talked about this story actually on a podcast about a year ago. A minister, a friend of mine, and she's also a counselor. And one of the things she said that I think was very helpful is that what really helps children go through these kinds of things, teenagers and adults, is to know that they have support from their family. And, you know, we tried to provide as much of that as possible for our son, you know, at the time, and continue to try to do that, because we know it's not easy being a black male, no matter where you are. And I think in particular, one of the things that I didn't anticipate, I think, when he was a baby, is really understanding the magnitude of raising a black male child. Again, no matter where you are, but particularly in an urban area, I think it's just challenging, right? It's challenging on all sides. You know, if the gang members don't try to recruit them, then the police officers are targeting them. And so they're getting it from both, you know, from both ways. And I think that's what makes it particularly challenging as a parent.
Oh, dear. So I wanted to ask you also, how much in terms of how you responded then and since, was the mommy in you, and how much was it the reporter in you?
Well, I think, first of all, it's the mommy in me, you know. So when this happened to my son and here they are handcuffing him, the first thing I did was I locked arms with him. Why? Because I felt like if they were going to harm him, they were going to have to harm me first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they kept telling me, you know, no, get back. He might run. I'm like, I'm locking arms around him. Where's he going to go? You know, where's he going to run? But at the same time, that reporter in my mind said, you know, don't be too aggressive because, you know, they could shoot you and him if they want to, having covered stories, you know, like this before. And so, you know, that kicked in as well, because I wanted this to end in a way that both of us would walk away, at least physically, and not be harmed. But psychologically, the harm had already been done.
I was thinking about you, the when you were talking about they brought the woman to identify whether or not your son was the perpetrator. And I thought about when I got mugged several years back, and the time flies, wow. But you know, they put me in a car and took me where because this is one of the times they actually responded kind of quickly. I was surprised. But they did put me in a car and take me down to a 7-Eleven that was, I would say, maybe a mile down or something. I don't know. But anyway, and they found a person that had on this, in this particular case, it was a guy that had on a pair of like black cargo type shorts, you know, long black shorts. And a white tank. So they took me to the 7-Eleven to identify this man. And I looked at him right away, and I was like, no, you know, that's not him. And they were like, are you sure? I'm like, yes, I'm sure. This is not the person at all. You know, and I felt so bad, because I'm like, I can't imagine how this person feels just on a cursory level, being accused of possibly committing a crime and having to be held by police while they bring me up there to say yay or no, this is the person.
It was very embarrassing. It was very embarrassing for us because it was right in front of our house, you know? And so we have neighbors wondering, oh, what's going on? Did your son do something? And I think sometimes there's, you know, although we talk about innocent until proven guilty, the reality is if you're Black in America, sometimes it's the opposite, you know, it's guilty until proven innocent. And so, you know, that part, it was, you know, it was embarrassing for my son. It was embarrassing for me. I mean, it was embarrassing, you know, for our whole household to have something like that happen. And also, you know, he's just riding his bike. He's just a kid, right? Riding his bike home. He's riding the driveway ambushed by two white police officers who handcuff him. You know, they put their hands on my child. So it's, like I said, it makes my stomach hurtle even now.
Okay, so we're gonna move off of that. Let's talk a little bit about, like I said, you have grown children at the same time you were growing your children, you were simultaneously growing your career. How did you manage that? Because that's a feat that and you've grown very great children. It's not that you know that, you know, you've had to worry about them, that, you know, and stuff like that. So there are people that want to know your secret.
Well, I don't know that there is a secret per se, but I will say this. It requires much focus and much sacrifice. And when I say that, when you are focused on your own career and your children, sometimes one has to take a little bit of a back seat, you know, while you work on the other. You know, I remember that commercial, you know, about she was fried up in a bacon, fried in a pan or something like that.
You
have it all. And, and I guess what I say is you can have it all, but not at the same time. And so while my children were younger, I was really focused on them. In fact, one of the reasons I took a job out of reporting and into the university is that it offered me a more flexible schedule that I wouldn't have had, you know, working in news. And so that, you know, that's really important. Now, once my youngest was in fifth grade, then I decided, oh, I'm going to focus on me more. So I went back to school, got a PhD, a doctorate in African-American studies, and I then decided that what was really going to be important for me would be to do something with all the research that I had done. And so right around the time, I would say, of the pandemic, well, actually 2016, I started working on a documentary. I then started working on a book, and I was doing that simultaneously. But again, by then, they were old enough, you know, to do more things for themselves. And so I felt as though, okay, now's the time to go back and focus, you know, on me. So I think it's really timing that's really important. And I think, you know, there's no secret formula. I just think it's about, you know, making sure that you're able to stay sane in the process, because, you know, if you're not healthy, you can't have healthy children or a healthy family or a healthy career. And so I know there's a lot of conversation now about self-care and how important that is, and it is. But part of self-care is also continuing to learn and continuing to, you know, stimulate yourself intellectually. And so I believe in doing all of that.
I do kind of want to go back, but not totally, but I want to go back and ask you, how important is environment, or how do you manage your environment? And the reason I ask that, because we hear a lot about stories that come out of Chicago and that area, and the violent crime rate and other, you know, controversial stuff. But you decided that you were going to be and I don't know how far you are, so maybe you can let us know how far you are from Chicago, but how did you decide that you were going to just, that's where you were going to be, and you could successfully raise your children there, and how much of an impact did all of that have, or are we hearing a lot of stuff that maybe is exaggerated or untrue?
Well, I don't think it's exaggerated, but it's not balanced. I'll put it that way. So when you hear about shootings and things happening in Chicago, that is true. It is accurate. But, of course, that's not the only thing that's happening. Is there fear about raising children in Chicago? Absolutely, indeed. We don't live in the city. We live in one of the suburbs in Evanston of Chicago. So that helps in terms of the crime rate and what have you, and also the school system. I mean, I'm a product of the Chicago public school system, but I'm not so sure I would put my kids in Chicago public school today. It just really depends. I mean, it's one of those situations where, yeah, you could probably find a school that would be, you know, adequate, but you have a lot of schools, unfortunately, that are not. And so I'm just, you know, just to keep it real, I think, you know, all of us are looking for the best, you know, education for our kids. It's funny, I was talking to my oldest daughter yesterday, and my middle daughter also said the same thing, is that they want to homeschool. And I thought, boy, that's really interesting. I thought about that as well even before, but just didn't, you know, I just was not having to work. Again, this area is also very expensive in terms of cost of living. So, you know, you kind of ask yourself, you know, am I really able to homeschool under those circumstances? So it's challenging because most of the people I know who, you know, most of the people I know rarely have their kids gone to public schools in Chicago. Most of them are either in suburban schools or maybe they're in private schools within the city. And so, you know, that does speak to, you know, what's really going on, you know, in the city. So one thing that, you know, is really important in terms of the juggle is, like, right now, I've got to go and talk to some students for about 10 minutes. And so I'm going to take a break probably and try to get back to you. But it, you know, some days it's very challenging to try to do as much as you can. And so I just think that some days it's easier than others. And some days you just have to say, oh, I got to put a pause on this until I can, you know, do this other thing over here.
I understand. Well, we're going to take a break and let you go do what you need to do. And if you're able to get back with us, that's fine. We've been speaking with Dr. Ava Thompson-Greenwell. She's a professor at Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions, comments, mommy stories you want to share, the number's 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we want to thank Ava Thompson-Greenwell for joining us, and hopefully she might have an opportunity to come back later in the show. If not, I was glad to have her on, especially to talk about the challenges that she's gone through, you know, especially with her son. because that's not, unfortunately, that's not an isolated incident. But, you know, it was great to have that firsthand, you know, experience to share. So everybody kind of know, you know, that it's not a joke. It's not exaggerated. These are not fictional stories. These things actually happen. The number, if you have a story that you want to share, 516-387-1944. So anyway, let me see. I was trying to think of stories that I could share about my mom. I have one that I want to share, and I may have shared it before, but I have one because I wanted to talk about how children are perceived. This is something that happened to me when I was in school. My mom was always my champion. She was like one of the pit bulls of moms, really, because I was, you know, in certain situations sometimes that and I was a very, very naive child and did not know how to handle some of my business. But she was always there for me. But I, you know how when you're in school and you always have these people, these teachers that want you to do your story on, you know, what I did on my summer vacation. So, and for us, it just so happened, you know, we kind of weren't those type of people that sat still on the weekends or the summer. So we, even if it was, you know, going up the road to visit a relative in, you know, in Leesburg or Bartow or St. Petersburg, you know, these are different parts of Florida, by the way, or up in North Florida, Monticello, or even we would take trips every now and then to go to the Bahamas. Even any of that, you know, we just like to kind of get out and you know, enjoy what life had to offer and visit. And on a budget, we were not rich, you know, but my mom wanted to make sure that, you know, I got a chance to know my relatives, and she wanted to make sure that I got exposed to a lot of stuff. So this one particular, time I did my report, we had traveled around Florida, and we'd gone to the Bahamas, and at that time, I was, I guess, kind of a nature buff or whatever. So report was about all of these different trees that we had seen going different places. And it's so funny because I was just talking to my husband the other day about going down to South Florida. We used to go down to Dania and visit relatives, and we always came back. We either had like coconut or sugar cane, and how I would nibble on sugar cane on the way back home. But anyway, so I'm doing this report on, you know, what I did on my summer vacation. And my mom says, okay, I came home crying one day, and she asked me what was wrong, and I told her they flunked me on my report on my summer vacation. And so she's like, let me see it. And she read it over, and so she called, and she said, I would like to sit down with the principal and the teacher. You know, it was a Catholic school I was going to at the time, and she asked about sitting down with the principal and the teacher. And so she got her meeting, and she said, okay, so, you know, I would like to know why there was a problem with my child's report on her summer vacation. And so, you know, fortunately for me, you know, I had a good report, even though, I mean, I had a report, best report with the teacher, that might have been a problem, but I had a very good report with the principal. Principal looked at my report, teacher looked at my report, and principal's like, okay, I don't see a problem with it. And the teacher's, you know, like, well, you know, asked the teacher what the problem was with the report. So, well, I thought the child was exaggerating. I did not believe that this young child had seen all this stuff and done all this stuff on her summer vacation. And it's like, well, yes, you know, we did. We went here and we did that and all of that type of stuff. And so she, you know, she ended up giving me, she could not give me an A. She had to give me an A minus on the report, you know, finding, I guess, some sort of grammatical error, which was not me at that time either. But it's just amazing how you get judged by people who either they have their own problems or they've put you in a box in terms of who you're supposed to be or what you're supposed to have done in your life, and not just giving you the benefit of the doubt, you know. But this was one of those instances where my mom had to step up and make it right, because how am I going to go and confront an adult as a third grader, you know, and say, no, this is what happened. This is what really happened, you know. So, you know, it's a shame, you know, that parents are having to fight these battles all the time and having to make judgment calls in terms of, you know, who's right. Did, you know, is my child exaggerating? Is that or whatever? Or, you know, is the teacher that's wrong? You know, so, you know, and oftentimes it is the mom that's going up to the school and having to do that. So kudos to the moms out there who are doing that. I just want to say that. It's a hard thing to be a mom out there. And my mom, like I said, she was not only mom to me, but, you know, she stepped up in a lot of cases for a lot of other of my family and friends. My best friend out in California used to call my mom Mama Jessie, you know. I was fortunate. I had parents that really kind of, they were, you know, didn't everything, but they were kind of cool, you know. So, you know, they had a good rapport with most of the kids in the family, you know, and friends as well. So, but anyway, you got mommy stories, share them. Number's 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. Like I was mentioning earlier about, and I'm sticking with this because I just think it's important, not necessarily just because of the baby formula issue, but I think really we need to open up the dialogue in terms of what is available to our moms, and especially we're in a society where it's almost not an option in some cases. Whether or not the mom works outside of the home, it's almost a necessity. It's almost mandatory. So if we're going to demand that we raise our children right, and we're going to, you know, have to work in order to have those resources to raise our children right, then we need to make sure that our employers step up and you know, do what's necessary to make those work environments right for the moms out there and the dads. But like I said, this month is about moms. So anyway, the number is 516-387-1944. I'm going to take a final break, and then when we come back, I don't know if Ava's available to come back with us, but we're going to continue on talking about moms and whatnot. There's other stories out there too. Before we go on break, our prayers are out to the victims of the mass shootings this weekend. Seriously, do you feel safe going anywhere these days? If you can't go get groceries and you can't go to church without fear of getting shot, I don't know what it is that you're supposed to be able to do. I think this calls for a lot more prayer. You know, we had 10 people to die in Buffalo alone in that shooting this weekend, and I just want to extend prayers and thoughts out to those people, because it's just unthinkable that you know, you're kind of always having to watch your back going out to church, or to, you know, the church shooting happened, a Presbyterian church in California. The church is going to the stores. I personally just think that I'm putting it out there again. I think that our religious leaders really, 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 really need to step up. I think they need to come forward and take the bull by the horns. I think that they need to really work on getting you know, some sort of religion or moral teaching or something of that nature back in the schools. If we're going to have these fights about sex education in the schools, you know, at least it's there to fight about. We need to get back to fighting about getting religion or some sort of moral teaching or spirituality or something back into the schools. That, and we need to monitor, do more monitoring of the people with these mental health issues. That needs to go back into the schools some way, shape, or form. Because a person that has a good moral compass, you know, does not do the type of things that we are seeing right now. It is imperative that we get a grip on this right now. And I'm calling out all of those people that have been called by our God, by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I'm calling you out. I'm calling on you to step forward and help these changes happen, because we are getting, our society is getting way too out of hand. And yeah, we know some stuff is coming. That's true. But you got to at least try. That's all I got to say. Anyway, taking our final break. The number is 516-387.
Your guest is back on.
Oh.
Your guest is back on. So let's skip the break and invite her back.
Okay. So we are inviting Ava Thompson-Greenwell, Dr. Ava Thompson-Greenwell, back on the show. Hey, Ava.
Hey.
Hey, okay. So
I think I heard you talking about the moral compass, right? Or the lack thereof.
Yes. You know it's me. I gotta go there.
And I think it's true. I mean, you know, when I see what happened on Saturday, I just say to myself, what has happened here? You know, what's gone so wrong? You know, how can you go in and shoot up a grocery store? Or shoot up
not just that. How do you drive from where you are? I mean, you don't even live in that community. What did they do to you? Why? And apparently he got in the conversation. I was looking at one report. He got in a conversation the other day, the day before the shooting, with someone at the store. And so the guy was on the news, and the guy said, you know, he just thought the guy was a little, he was like, you know, yeah, the guy seemed a little off. Maybe he didn't belong there. It seemed like he might have been a little racist or whatever. But didn't know.
Yeah, I saw that interview too.
Didn't know. And has a manifesto or whatever, 180-page.
That's right, right. This replacement theory that they've been talking about is quite interesting. In some ways, now it's out, right? It's out for the world to see it. I think, you know, many of us have suspected that that's certainly been a fear of some. That is, you know, I think back to the song, A Fear of a Black Planet, right? A fear of, even though the planet is majority brown people, black and brown people, I think some people, especially in the United States, you know, they fear that. And I think you have to go back and look at the history of the United States and, you know, how it was founded.
Right.
By whom? I want to say founded. And I don't mean founded in the traditional sense, because, you know, I know they just came here. We had Native American people who were already here. It's a real interesting time that we're living in right now. I never, never anticipated that it would come to this.
No, me neither. Me neither. And like I was saying, you know, going to church, going to the store, and having to look over your shoulder. And I just, you know, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I take my phone. I used to not take my phone in church because I'm like, no, I'm not going to take the phone in church. I don't need it in church and everything. I take my phone in church. It's on silent, but it's on. I'm taking my phone in church because I don't know when I'm going to have to call 911.
That's true.
That's why. That's why I take my phone to church. That's the primary reason I take my phone in church, because I don't know when I'm going to have to call 911. Otherwise, I wouldn't take it in church. You know. But anyway,
yeah, and that's the schizophrenic nature, or I should say the dramatic pros and cons, right, of cell phones, technology, social media, all these things that we have at our disposal. So we are probably the most technologically advanced time in history. But at the same time, mm-hmm. from a human standpoint, it makes me wonder whether we are losing our humanity in the process of becoming more technologically
yes.
advanced.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons I was talking about. That's another subject that I'm going to probably bring you back on. I do want to have a discussion about because I think that is key. But I want to get back to you and your mommy stories. And I want to ask you basically what changes have you seen in our society from when you were raising your children when they were younger versus, you know, how mothers are raising their children now? What do you think has been the biggest change? And when you look at our young mothers now and the challenges that they face, what kind of advice do you give them?
So I think there are a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, I'm thinking about this morning, a story about the lack of formula on the shelves and how if you are not a breastfeeding mom and you are, you know, having to rely on formula, who would have imagined, right, that you would go to the store? And, yeah, there were always maybe some mini shortages or expensive, you know, depending on where you shopped. But the fact of the matter is the lack of formula on the shelves, again, I just can't imagine. I mean, to be honest with you, I think it's a more trying time now to be a mother and to be a parent. And so formula, that's one thing. I think what's also different, again, is technology, right? I mean, if I had it to do over again, I think I would have never given my kids a cell phone. Now, I know that they eventually have to have one, right? Maybe. But I really wish the pendulum could swing back in some ways, because we now are seeing studies and surveys about the impact of access to social media at such a young age, particularly for our young girls. You know, this idea that, you know, you've got to have a certain look, you have to be a certain size. You know, while on the one hand we have movements that are pushing against that, the reality is this constant, you know, stream of information coming into their world, I don't think it's good. You know, I think that they are experiencing too much too soon. And that's on all spectrums. I think they need to be able to be kids and not have to worry. I mean, I never forget 9/11. My oldest daughter was in kindergarten, and I was watching the news that morning, and I think the youngest was in a high chair, so that's how young they were. And I saw what was happening, and I thought to myself, this is not going to be a good day. And I sent her off to school, but also worried about, you know, will they send them home early? You know, what's sort of going to happen next? And, you know, we often talk about that having children now in their 20s, there's a lot that they've had to experience that's traumatic, you know? And now the good thing about that, if there is a shining, you know, rainbow in that, is that some of them are now going into workplaces saying, no, we're not going to work all day, and we're not going to work on weekends because we need to take care of our mental health. If I'm having a bad day, I'm going to call in, and I'm just not going to push myself beyond exhaustion. So I think there are some things that are coming as a result of that generation that I think will be good, because they pretty much saw us work, you know, our fingers to the bone, because maybe we thought we had to at that particular time. So for the challenges, and that's the question you asked, the challenges for current day moms, again, I do believe is making sure you have a safe place. You know, what's safe anymore? I think that's a question that a lot of moms will have on their mind. Affordability, health care, COVID, oh, my gosh. You know, my husband and I were saying, boy, if we had had young children who, you know, had to be home the entire time of being on Zoom and you're trying to work, it's challenging, right? That's why we had so many mm-hmm. moms leave the workforce. It's because at some point you just say, I can't do it. And it's okay to say you can't do it, because you do reach that limit. But on the other hand, people have had to get more resourceful, right? Mm-hmm. They've had to rely on family members or on neighbors. You know, I was talking to somebody mm-hmm. recently about how, as part of the Great Migration, you know, when families would come from the South to the North, they would stay with family members for quite a while until they could get on their feet. you know, the cost of living for just housing for young people is just exorbitant. So that's a challenge, right? That as a parent, you're saying, well, if it costs this much now to live in an apartment, what's it going to be like when my child is old enough to actually, you know, need an apartment? And just the ability for young people to have children. I mean, I think, you know, there is a movement among some 20-somethings to say, I'm not going to have children because of climate change, because of the racist systems that we live in. And so that means the population is going to be stunted as a result of that.
So Ava, thanks so much.
I think parents have to worry about. You're welcome. You're welcome. I know time is ticking, so thank
you
for having me.
You know how that works. We'll have you back soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
You too. God bless. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.